I recognize that it is such a treat to be here with you guys because most of you are my family. Many of you know my parents, and a lot of you prayed for Randall and I when I was walking through that time of sickness. And so I just want to give a heartfelt thank you to all of you guys, and especially my family, just publicly thank you guys for the ways that you helped kind of carry Randall and I. One thing that was very special to me is whenever we came to visit, I was on a very strict diet. I was allergic to a lot of foods, gluten, dairy. I couldn't have sugar, and I was allergic to eggs. But whenever I came to visit Grandma and Grandpa, between the aunts and cousins and everyone, I was able to eat almost everything that I would normally eat because they went to this great ado to make special food for me. And I want to, yeah. It's not on. Let's try this again.
Green light's on.
Hello? Is that good? All right. You can hear me now. Okay. Do I need to start over? I'm just kidding. I will say, though, that we got to spend last night with Grandma and Grandpa, and this is not bloat from Grandma's food. I am 3 months pregnant. So. Just wanted to clear that up. I am going to grab a stool. Is there a stool? Up here. Okay. Let's do this. I'm not used to standing behind a podium, so if you guys are okay with it, I'm going to sit and share with you. David, who led worship, is also my cousin on my mom's side. And thank you, David, for that. It's one of my favorite things in the world is to be able to sit and sing love songs to God with all of these other people who love God, who are my brothers and sisters. You're my brothers and sisters in Christ. And David, you have such a gift, and I just want to bless you in that publicly and just encourage you to continue seeking God in that way because you are a host for God's presence, and His presence comes when we sing in that way. And so I pray that you would just continue to be able to express your love for God through singing and music. That's beautiful. Let's just continue that spirit of worship in this teaching time. And as we share, I want you guys to be able to just to continue experiencing God and His love. And a huge part of our story for Randall and I is this whole idea of God's love for us. So I thought we could start out our time together by me reading a passage of scripture from Songs of Solomon 2. So I invite you to sit back and relax. If you like to close your eyes, you can do that. And imagine what the Father is doing as these scriptures are being read to you. This is what the lover is saying to his friend. So it's basically what God, it's an allegory for what God says to us. I'm starting in Songs of Solomon 2, verse 10. Get up, my dear friend, my fair and beautiful lover. Come away with me. Look around you. Winter is over, and the winter rains are over and gone. Spring flowers are in blossom all over. The whole world's a choir and singing. Spring warblers are filling the forest with sweet arpeggios. Lilacs are exuberantly purple and perfumed, and cherry trees fragrant with blossoms. Get up, dear friend, my fair and beautiful lover. Come away with me. Come, my shy and modest dove, leave your seclusion, come out in the open. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is soothing and your face is ravishing. This love, this radical self-sacrificing love, this is our foundation. This is what we run to and what we stand on and what we build on and ultimately what we surrender to. This Jesus who gave all of him for all of me. And there's never been a better deal. And the mystery here is that the God of the universe is our lover, our friend, our father. And the miracle is that he uses death and suffering to somehow create powerful resurrection life. So this is the story of my husband and I living on the east side in Lancaster City at 124 North Broad Street, the house with the green door. We live on a hill, the hill that sees a steady stream of McCaskey and Wickersham students every morning and afternoon. We've lived here for over 8 years now, and the more that time passes, the more I love our little street, our three-story row home, and our motley group of neighbors. But more than all of that, I love reflecting on how God's kingdom came and made itself right at home in the middle of our mess, right here on the hill on Broad. Randall and I moved into this house the night we returned from our honeymoon in June of 2005. When we moved into that row home on North Broad Street, we did so intentionally, knowing we are missionaries wherever we live and having no idea what God had up his sleeve. I loved many things about our street. We were the only white people, and I loved that my neighbors were from Haiti and Belize and Puerto Rico and the Dominican and had names like Pedro and Joan, and all the different cultures seemed rather glamorous to me. Initially, Randall and I felt God calling us to do two things, to let our neighbors be our community and to pray for our neighbors. So we began by going to our neighbors for help instead of calling our parents. This meant borrowing Bob's tools and buying our used appliances from Bert and asking Martha for good recipes and returning favors like agreeing to house sit and feed cats and get mail. And we began grocery shopping at the local Giant grocery store instead of driving to the Giant on Lititz Pike. This naturally meant buying more Goya brand products than organic items. And I would run into the neighbors at the local Giant and was often reminded that God's love is shared and learned in the day-to-day. What better way to share love than at the grocery store when everyone is tired from long lines and busy days? And I found that God's light shines through in those moments, those ordinary, struggling, naked moments. No chance to put on airs if you're living life together. And in the day-to-day moments, Randall and I found opportunities to be peacemakers, like the day Randall raced out of the house to talk to our neighbor as she busted in her boyfriend's car windows with the handle of our brisk broom, or the terrible day the feuding neighbor reached out his window and shot across the sidewalk at the neighbor's house at 5 p.m. with children all walking on the sidewalks. No one was hurt, praise God, but that brought about conversations about peace, prayer, protection, and God. And I remember the day the boots sounded loud outside the door as the federal marshals raced up the steps. Who knew that our cheerful neighbor right next door with the fancy sneakers was a wanted drug dealer? And I remember the boys, not yet men, and the gang fight and the fear in their eyes. We watched the neighbors all hiding inside and wondered together where God's kingdom was in all of this. And that Halloween night, with the Jeep full of men and their metal baseball bats, I remember the police finally arriving and the death. Someone died in that fight. And together with our neighbors, we shook our heads and wondered why and how and what to do, and our prayers intensified. Prayers for safety and peace and God's kingdom here. I remember us finally gaining more courage to step out and speak into situations. I remember the day Randall stood on the porch confronting neighbors who were yelling obscenities at a child. I remember their anger and curses and them saying, "This is none of your blanking business." And I listened through the door as Randall said, "This boy is my neighbor, and that makes it my business." The next day, that neighbor boy's father came to us and said, "We have your back. We are always looking out for you and April. You're good people." And slowly our street began to feel more like community, more like family, and more like home. So we joined our neighbors for Thanksgiving dinner. It was kind of strange not being with family, but we were slowly learning the joys of having neighbors who are like family. I remember that first Thanksgiving dinner with our neighbors took us by surprise. We arrived promptly at 5 p.m. to discover we were the first to arrive and that the meal was barely started. They all spoke Spanish, so we listened and smiled and nodded. We finally ate dinner at 10 p.m. that night, long after everyone had had way too much to drink. So our drunken Thanksgiving dinner consisted of amazing food, topped off with a bit of flan and rice and beans and deeper friendships. And we also had this growing awareness of the deep-seated addictions that were on our street. Meanwhile, we joined with the neighbors for cookouts, movies, and long late-night chats on the front porch, and we realized there's no separating the communities in our life. So our church family joined our street community, and they got to know each other through campfires and hiking the trails near Lock 12. And I saw that church is more about gathering together to love God than a polished Sunday morning service. We learned that when our neighbors' music kept us from sleeping, it meant that we should join the party rather than insist on them turning down the volume or calling the police. So Randall and I began going over to Neighbors to watch the late-night boxing matches on Friday nights well after midnight. Thankfully, he always came home with a plate full of rice and beans and cake for me. And I learned to sleep with white noise and the sound of rowdy neighbors in the background. One morning, as I was running down Broad Street, I do more running than prayer walking, I had this vision of the kingdom coming in like a banner on the heels of my feet. I took that moment as a promise from God that his kingdom was coming in greater force here to the hill on Broad, and I was so hopeful. But as I ran closer to our house, I saw an elderly woman beating a little boy over the head with her flip-flop. This was not a vision, this was for real. My heart brimmed with disappointment. Here I was, having a vision of God's kingdom coming, and then I see this. So I stopped, walked up on the porch, and asked if she needed anything. The woman didn't speak much English, but she told me a sorry story of a trip across the ocean and family that they were waiting for them to arrive. So I talked to the little boy a while, and we played tag. I was hoping to wear the boy out to give this woman the rest she needed. Later, as I pondered the situation, I was reminded through a message from Heidi Baker, a mission worker in Mozambique, that love has to look like something, and that something means taking the time to stop and taking the time to love. And that's how God's kingdom comes, taking time to stop, taking time to love. I remember the day I sensed God telling me to start a children's club for the kids on Broad Street. I felt overwhelmed with the idea and didn't know where to start. A few days later, a random lady knocked on my door and said she wanted to do a kids club and asked if I would help her. So together we did a Christmas club, and that club turned into several years of working with volunteers from Connect Church and West End Mennonite Church, and we taught the kids all sorts of Bible stories and listened to their prayers and talked about God's love and miracles. By 2007, Randall and I had graduated from college and were ready to begin thinking about moving overseas as mission workers. However, by the time we began making plans for all of that, I had become very sick. I just realized that my notes are not in order, so give me a second. We'll just go with it. Over the next few months, my symptoms worsened to the point that I was forced to walk with a limp. I started having short and long-term memory loss, and I was forced to resign from my job as a foster care caseworker. In that time, there was a lot of confusion and no easy diagnosis. We saw multiple doctors, and they would test me for anything and everything, and the result came back that the only thing I tested positive for was Lyme disease. But at that point, based on my health history, the doctors knew that I would have had Lyme disease for probably 7 or 8 years and had never received antibiotics for it. So at that point, it had spread to all of the major systems in my body, the neurological system, bones, muscles, including my, I don't know if that will be any different, but thank you. and my gastroenterology, that system too. And so by the time the system had progressed to that point, I was pretty much bedridden. And that happened in early 2008. So suddenly we were in this dark, dark season. I went from being newly married and loving life to a very, very dark valley, and something that was very scary for us because of the lack of answers. And I realized that in this dark valley, that the shadows in my life began roaring for attention. This looked like anger, depression, and self-pity. And I realized that it's in the valley that God creates a space for us to get down and get dirty. And for me, that meant dealing with past hurts and broken relationships. See, the high winds of the storms in our life are strong for a reason. They tear away any facades that hide what God really wants to do in our lives. And the Father, he's so gentle. He brought kind healers into my life, mentors, therapists, spiritual directors. Yes, I saw all of them. and they walked with me to healing. And I found that perfect love that does cast out fear. And it's only when I understood God's love for me that I was able to find the courage to face my hurt and let it go. I found these song lyrics to be so true that after the rain has fallen and the storm clouds rolled away, the sweetest name remained on my soul because he's faithful and he is always good. And God used that storm of sickness to bring me to new levels of understanding myself and him and how he loves me. So after two rounds of 60 days of intravenous antibiotics, the doctor shared the devastating news that my body wasn't responding to antibiotics, and that was the only treatment. So this journey of trying treatment after treatment went on for 3 years. We tried a lot of alternative, natural things. The specialist we were seeing eventually concluded that my body was having an autoimmune reaction to the Lyme bacteria, and there was nothing more they could do. All the while, we still lived on the hill on Broad Street, and God was still working. The neighbors sat with me through IVs and brought food, and they cried with me when they saw the cane and the wheelchair. And somehow, even while Randall and I and our marriage and our spirits were all deeply hurting and inward focused, God continued to work. And that is another mystery. And this is what I learned in that season, that being missional means living in community, and that the gospel flows organically out of a life that is dependent on God, regardless of how put together we really are. And I learned firsthand that hurting people hurt people. I remember wondering, how in the world do you do marriage when both people are so torn up and disappointed with life? I watched my husband hurting, but could only see how he was letting me down. And it took a kind counselor to help me see that he was wounded too, and we both needed compassion. And I learned that even those who seem to have it all together can still need healing. How many of you know that hurt can look like a lot of ugly things? God showed me how to love the hurting because that's how he loved me. So I had to learn how to extend that same love to the man I vowed to love for life in sickness and in health. And I learned that living in fellowship or relationship or friendship or doing church or being married or being missional, all of that means loving each other while we're hurting. Loving even when our very wounds touch their very wounds. Loving while I'm hurt. Isn't that what God did for me? Was wounded so that I could heal. See, there's healing power in loving each other. I remember in the middle of all of this hurt and craziness, walking and talking with a friend from church. She literally spent hours each week listening to me and praying for me. And I'll always remember this one walk in the rain. It was drizzling and I was talking about how hard it is to hope or pray for healing when disappointment had been my lot so far. And she told me a story about a paralyzed man and how he proclaimed that his miracle was that his heart stayed soft even while he hoped for healing. So I took that story and made it my own and began praying every morning, Jesus, please come fight for me and please keep my heart soft. And it was soon after I began praying that prayer that I began experiencing his love. I would wake up in the morning and usually would only sleep for 2 or 3 hours because of the pain. And so when I would wake up, the first thing I would feel is this kind of reminder that I was very sick and very nauseous and in a lot of pain, and mornings were very hard. But when I started praying that prayer every morning, I began waking up to this song in my head. And I can't sing it. I've tried different times to reproduce it, and I can't. But it was a song of God's love. And every morning I would wake up to hearing this, and I now attribute it to the Father singing his love over me. And I don't know if I would have been able to do that, to hear that song, if he hadn't been keeping my heart soft. It's easy to become bitter and angry when you feel pain every single day, whether it's emotional pain or physical pain. So we spent the summer of 2011 at Hershey Med Center, where I saw various panels of diagnostic physicians. And after the slew of medical appointments and tests, we met with the heads of the departments, and they said, again, there's nothing more we can do other than treat symptoms. Maybe I would see improvement in the next 10 years. I remember crying and fighting the despair and I asked the doctors, please just make me well enough to have a baby and be a mom. After the doctors left, Randall and my parents and Randall's parents sat in the exam room in this palpable disappointment. It was then that the head of one of the departments came back into the room. I remember her silver-white hair and her bright blue eyes meeting mine as she stated in a clear voice, you are going to get better, and you are going to have a baby. And with that, she was gone. I felt a bit angry because she had just said the exact opposite moments before, but that statement was enough to give us hope. So we went home that day and decided if we couldn't have a family, we would travel, and we began planning a trip out west. We enjoyed listening to Bill Johnson's online sermon, so we decided to visit his church in California. We began making reservations and looking for tickets. And then just weeks later, I had that weird feeling in the morning and that the sense that something was different and the positive pregnancy test. We were shocked. 7 years of waiting and wondering if this would ever happen, and now here it was. Terrified and ecstatic all at the same time, we quickly called friends and family, asking them to join us in praying for safety over this little life. We canceled the West Coast trip because we were having a baby, and as I was canceling our reservations, I saw that Bill Johnson would be in Lancaster City, just 7 blocks from our house, the very next weekend. So we registered for that conference, even though we knew very little about it. So at 16 weeks pregnant, Randall and I attended the Voice of the Apostles conference to hear Bill Johnson speak. Many miracles happened that week, starting with Randall seeing the goodness in God's heart once again. I remember standing and singing, God is so good, with Randall, marveling at my husband worshiping at my side again. What a gift. And I told God, if this is all there is, no physical healing, but just a strong sense of your presence and a husband's healed heart, then that's enough. But God had more in mind. The last day of the conference, I was praying quietly by myself when a woman approached me, gathered me in her arms in the biggest, tightest hug I've ever received from a stranger, and she began praying God's love over me. She prayed against depression, against feeling helpless, and she kept saying that Satan was no longer able to harass me. And then I felt this strong sense of peace, like a heavy blanket, fall over me, and I had a vision of being taken up into the heavens to meet my Creator. And God reached out his light, and he put a blue force field of protection around my body. I felt it beaming over my head and feet and fingers and toes. And when I woke up, the woman said that she saw me in a waiting room with God. She said, God is the doctor. And he just came out and he called your name. He said, April, you're next. That evening, Randy Clark got up to speak and said that someone was at the conference with Lyme disease, and God wanted to heal that person and asked that person to stand. I stood and he prayed. The next day I had no pain. I ate food that I had been allergic to for years. I remember eating ice cream with Randall as tears streamed down his cheeks, both knowing that our long dark journey was maybe coming to an end. I called one of the specialists and asked him to rerun a few of the tests. I wanted to see the healing on paper. 3 weeks later, the doctors called with the results. No sign of any autoimmune disease. All white blood cell counts were normal. I was given a completely clean bill of health. And while we rejoiced in the physical healing, Randall and I both recognized that his healing came first to our hearts. And the miracle of healing happened to both of us. And the inner restoration was in no way less than the physical healing. There's many beautiful stories wrapped within this one, but my husband is here to share his story as well. And I feel like whenever we share together, I have to take the opportunity just to thank him for sticking with me. It was a hard journey, but I can tell you it was worth it to work it out together, because it does get better if anyone is in the midst of struggling yourself. It's worth it to work together.
So my question to you all is, are you able to receive God's love right now with whatever you're going through? And that's my son, Jackson, by the way. We're kind of in an interesting state because I'm now entering tax season, so he is really missing his mom and dad. So anyway, that aside. So my second question then about your heart is, are you at a place where it's soft and pliable enough that God is able to break through and you can receive his love? God so loved us that he was willing to send his son to be a perfect sacrifice. But what does receiving his love mean or even look like? And then we'll come back to that. So what I'm going to talk about briefly is being a caregiver. I have a friend in her 60s that her and her husband retired and did not expect, obviously, anything to go wrong, but she is now a caregiver for him. And, I mean, I can see that daily struggle of having to deal with the fact that her husband isn't the man that he had been a few years ago. But being a caregiver when you're in your 20s is very unique and has a lot of challenges. And one thing is that we were married 2 years probably before April started having those complications. So I don't know, maybe in your 60s there's different reasons for it being hard, but I feel like your sense of loyalty when you're in your 20s is very slim to your wife at that point, and that just made it really hard. So if you can picture, I live in Lancaster, you have a lot of Amish here too, a team pulling horses in the field, a team of horses pulling farm equipment. Sorry. I knew that sounded wrong. In a marriage, you would hope that you both are there working and two is greater than one. But one thing that we found, or that I found, is that I felt like I was pulling alone for a time being. And when one spouse is sick or hurting, the other one, you just have to step up your game and do a lot that the other spouse usually did. During the worst part of her illness, I struggled with feeling guilty for the resentment that I was feeling. As males, we like to fix things and we like to provide and protect our wives. And I felt hopeless and sad because no matter what we seemed to do, as April shared, we tried a lot of things, she didn't get any better. I started to hate her illness. It consumed our conversations, and whenever we saw people, it consumed our conversations with them. It was hard to separate my hatred of the illness with April as a person. When I saw her, I always saw the effects of the illness. I saw this every day for so long that it became hard to know exactly how to deal with it. I couldn't figure out how to block the pain except by not reflecting on it. And I think maybe that's a male thing. I think we can be good at kind of categorizing things. So I became an expert at that. I found it easier just not to share my thoughts and struggles and feelings with April until there came a point where April's like, you need to get help, Randall, or else. I think it was that or else that I was like, okay, maybe I should. And so I did a couple different things, but I had a mentor that was really helpful, and then a group that were my peers that I was accountable to for various reasons, not just my marriage with April. And so those were really helpful. To outsiders, though, everything still looked normal, but on my inside, I had this constant emotional stomach ache, and maybe April disagrees, but I think I have gray hairs that I attribute to this time. Because you look at my dad, and he's only getting gray hairs now, so I feel like I shouldn't have gray hairs yet. But everything that was happening was out of my control, I had to deal with guilt of being April's protector and provider, yet not preventing the onslaught of symptoms. I've had to deal with guilt on the day-to-day, like when she would say, "Randall, I want a back rub." I'd be like, "Nah, I really don't want to give one today." And maybe I would, but I did it with resentment. Or she was too sick to help around the house, and so I was stuck with doing her share. And then I also just felt the loss of many things, from going on to further schooling to cutting short evenings with friends or dates at restaurants because she would start feeling bad and want to get away from other people in the public. And I felt the loss with how our finances were affected, and as April shared, not being able to start a family was both a big one for us. And lastly, but for me, it was pretty important, not she couldn't run with me anymore. We both ran a marathon together in 2007, I think. And then that was soon after that that she wasn't able to run at all. But as a side note, in 2013, in November, I promised if she ever got better, I would run a half marathon with her. And we ran every step of the way together in October 2013, and that was beautiful. It was a lot of fun. One thing that April and I have learned is that this journey has affected our relationships with God differently. I really struggled. I argued and cursed God, trying to figure out how this that I was experiencing here on earth fits into my understanding of him. I found myself taking the most important tenets. Of course, growing up Mennonite, I had Sunday school. I went to Rosedale, so I had all this theology ingrained in me. But I found myself taking that all and trying to see how it worked in my life. And I believe God was all-powerful, wise, and loving, but my experience was making me question that. And because I saw my wife and her daily struggles. And also, I wanted somebody to blame, and I felt like God was kind of a safe person to go to and just blame for it. Going back to what April was talking about with us standing and singing God is good, that was the night before her healing. One thing that was really hard for me wasn't so much like hearing someone preach a sermon while I was struggling with my relationship with God, but worship. There's something about worship that you know it in your own heart, whether you mean it or not, and I knew that I didn't mean it, so I never wanted to be in a worship service just because I felt really uncomfortable and I felt like I didn't want to just take part in it at all. But one thing that stuck out to both of us that night was that simple song, God is so good. There's that verse in the Bible that just totally annoyed me when people would say it to us, "And all things work together for good, Randall." They're like, "Shut up. I don't want to hear that right now. I'd rather you just say I'm praying for you and leave it at that." So singing a song like God is so good was groundbreaking for me, because my heart was trying to say it and like trying to believe it, like, yes, God, in spite of maybe having this wife that might use a cane the rest of her life and her brain might not be fully there, I think you're good. And that was a pivotal moment. A day later, when she was healed, I felt totally unworthy. I had to ask God to forgive me for my unbelief and distrust of him. Both April and I could barely muster anything up to heaven except our brokenness, and that was enough. In other words, I strongly feel that when Jesus talks about needing faith the size of a mustard seed, that he really meant that, and that it's an excellent picture of how little our faith really plays into receiving God's love to us. And in our case, healing, physical, radical physical healing. Hosea 10 Hosea is one of the prophets of Israel, and Hosea 10 talks about how Israel had sinned, and God allowed them to be carried off into slavery, and then the prophet speaks of Israel turning back to God by seeking his face, and that God will break up their unplowed grounds, and I think that's an imagery of, again, your hearts, like he is breaking up these hearts of the Israelites. He's breaking up. Can he break up our hearts, or our, you know, our hearts need to be at a place where God can do something with it? I like word pictures, but I have difficulty generating one that describes what happened in my heart. Since it's Super Bowl Sunday, I do have a football word picture. Picture a long-suffering Eagles fan. I know Lynn is an Eagles fan, and I am. Year after year, we say next year. But then picture that one season that just everything goes right, and they win the Super Bowl. Or, since I like athletics, I have another... A runner. Picture, it doesn't have to be running, but picture the feeling after a hard workout, the satisfaction in it. Are you able to receive God's love? Learning to receive it when you feel good about yourself may be a little bit easier, but would also challenge you to be able to learn to receive it when things are going terribly wrong. And now April has a couple more words.
Yes, this is on. Good. So after the healing, our lives changed pretty dramatically. A healthy baby boy joined our family on April 19, 20, 2012. We named him Jackson because that name means God is gracious. I remember not being able to sleep that first night with Jackson lying in his bassinet and Randall and I staring at him, saying over and over again, how in the world did this even just happen? And Broad Street rejoiced with us. They watched and noted when I was strong enough to run again, and they brought gifts and food this time to celebrate a birth instead of mourn a sickness. And we talked about miracles and babies and neighbors. And our neighbors praised God out loud with us. Yes, they thanked him. God knows how to weasel his way into people's hearts. And now the neighbors come to us openly for prayer, for healing, for the aching back, for the need for surgery, the need for a job. And after 8 years of living on the hill on Broad, I'm finally starting to see God's kingdom come to our street. This summer we saw a neighbor's family plan a trip to visit their family in the Dominican, and they took large bins of donations for the schools there. Other neighbors planned block parties and welcomed everyone. No more feuding. We gathered together in our porches late at night and reminisced about the way things used to be. And we heard stories from our neighbors of God giving dramatic freedom from addictions. Another recently was out helping Randall jump his car when he said, I've been wanting to tell you that I found Jesus. Yes, that. This neighbor boy's son, or this neighbor's son, had been a part of our kids' club, and at every kids' club when we asked for a prayer request, he would ask prayer for his dad, who was an alcoholic. Now this man is free from addiction, owns his own home, provides for a family, and is a leader in the community. This was also the neighbor that his loud parties would keep us up at night, and Randall would join him for the boxing matches, and the neighbors, it was part of his family that was feuding that caused that one death on the street a few years earlier. It's been amazing to see the radical change in his life. And this is another lesson I've learned, that it's only in getting to know God that I can love him. And it's only in loving him that I can trust his goodness, even when I walk through valleys. And it's only when I know the goodness of his heart that I can say yes to him in quick, natural surrender. I learned this in a deeper way just this last year on June 21, the day we lost our baby. The baby was just 9 weeks old in utero, and the loss of a pregnancy was like a shockwave, because I was convinced we were in a season of restoration where God was giving us back everything we had lost in those years of sickness. And when the signs of the miscarriage began, I begged and pleaded and prayed for this little life to be saved, hoping for another miracle. And the disappointment and grief of it all left me standing in my kitchen just a few days later, watching my tears mix with soapy dishwater and mourning and feeling nothing short of self-pity in pure raw form. And it was then that I felt the Spirit calling my heart to worship. And with a heart aching, I cried, "I can't. How can I worship when I'm left feeling so confused and disappointed again?" And in that moment, the Spirit called my heart to say yes. Yes to this valley, even the valley of the shadow of death. Yes to saying goodbye to my baby. And ultimately, yes to God and His love. In that moment, the song Homeward Bound was being played on the radio. And the line goes, I will run this race. I will do it all for love. Your love compels me forward. Your love controls my heart. And I just can't get away. I was reminded that my love for God has to be stronger, stronger than everything. I have to love God more than my children, or my career, or my husband, or my health. So I said a soft, audible yes to God. And after saying yes, I knew the protocol. I knew from experience that the next prayer has to be help, or the yes is nothing more than lip service. So I asked for that. I asked for help. Help to grieve, help to say goodbye, help to worship. And it was then that the hallelujahs and the songs of worship poured from my heart, genuine and true. And the irony is that it felt so right to just worship God there in my grieving. And I knew then and there that I was experiencing grace in the truest form. It was like I went from a screaming toddler to a child resting on my dad's shoulder, completely surrendered and able to be comforted. And I realized that all trusting in God comes from a heart that is in love with God. And having a heart of love for God comes from the ability to see and feel and experience His goodness in every day. I know God's goodness not just from the big miracles. Yes, I was healed very dramatically, and that is amazing. But the miracles are all around us every day. The deep blue sky, the salty ocean, the sun rising and setting every day, day after day. And as a mother, I've seen God in my day-to-day life like never before, watching God knit a child in His image inside my womb and birth that new life right before my very eyes. And then watching this new life, God's image, full of Him, live and breathe all around me every day. His miracles and goodness are all around and are discovered in a life that is slow enough to hear and see the spiritual within the physical. It's remembering His love on a daily, moment-by-moment basis that our hearts are kept always longing for Him and seeking Him and trusting Him.
I want to make one more comment about worship, just because I think worship, and when I'm talking about worship, I mean singing. I know worship can be a lot of different things. One thing that I've experienced recently, since the healing, was in songs particularly that relate to God's holiness or power, I just get struck. I don't know what it is. I'm not really a feely person. I've never been really, like, charismatic feely. But the second song this morning did it to me where, like, even, it was like the second word. I couldn't sing anymore. I just started crying. And it's so weird. Like, I wasn't even asking God, "Oh, come and help me in this worship service." It was just like, boom, it happened without. And sometimes I don't get annoyed at it, but sometimes it's like, okay, I just want to sing. But point being, again, God, the experiencing God is totally different than just knowing about Him. And it was just awesome to be able to not learn it the hard way, but to learn that God truly does love me and my situation. Remember those word pictures that I shared. The truth is that even while you're waiting for your miracle, or when the team, football team, keeps losing, or if the runner never finishes that marathon, or the waiting just goes on and on, we can still have hope because our trust is in Jesus, and he never fails, never gives up. His promises are always true. We can place our hope in God's promises and find that assurance to encourage us to persevere in times of darkness. Our confidence and assurance have to be anchored in God and his faithfulness to fulfill all of his promises, not in our performance. The breakthrough comes from Jesus, not us. He has accomplished the cleansing of our sins once for all. What's your anchor? Your money, your kids, your parents, your possessions, your career, your church? None of these will sustain you. All of these one day will be taken away. Christ needs to be your anchor, needs to be your everything, needs to be the one you turn to first. In the Old Testament, God had promised to make Abraham into a great nation, but God didn't say exactly when that would happen. God's plan was to give Abraham a son in 25 years. By the time about 10 years had passed, Abraham was in his mid-80s and his wife wasn't far behind. They began to think that maybe God wasn't going to fulfill his promise. And then recall how Abraham kind of took the matter in his own hands. But God still worked through that imperfection. It is not difficult to see how an anchor prevents drifting. A certain hope in God's covenant made to Abraham and his descendants, guaranteed by God's promise, is the anchor for our souls. As it is unchangeable, so it is immovable. We will not drift if we cling to Christ. And these unchangeable promises are also spoken about in Hebrews 6. And I just want to read that section of scripture. When God made his promise to Abraham, he backed it to the hilt, putting his own reputation on the line. He said, I promise that I'll bless you with everything I have. Bless, bless, and bless. Abraham stuck it out and got everything that had been promised to him. When people make promises, they guarantee them by appeal to some authority above them, so that if there is any question that they will make good on the promise, the authority will back them up. When God wanted to guarantee his promise, he gave his word a rock-solid guarantee. God can't break his word. And because his word cannot change, his promise is likewise unchangeable. We who have run for our very lives to God have every reason to grab the promised hope with both hands and never let go. It's an unbreakable spiritual anchor, reaching past all appearances, right to the very presence of God, where Jesus, running ahead of us, has taken up his permanent post as high priest for us.